Hello, and welcome to another conversation from the Child Health Advisory Council and Career Physician. We are a group of former leaders and chiefs and chairs who are committed to passing on our experience and wisdom to the next generation of pediatric leaders and pediatricians. I'm Bruder Stapleton, chair of the Child Health Advisory Council. Other council members are Christine Gleason, Craig Hillemeyer, Renee Jenkins, Danielle LaRocca-Rina, Valerie Opapari, Bruce Rubin, Robert Sowen, Arnold Strauss, and Wesley Millican, the CEO of Career Physician, as well as John Hayes. Please visit careerphysician.com to review our leadership material and other conversations. And now, welcome to today's Insight Conversation.
My name is Wesley Millican, CEO of Career Physician. Today, we were going to talk a bit about succession planning, how it can impact positively or negatively a department's future and the legacy of its leader. First question we wanted to talk about today would be, how should department and division leaders think about succession planning? I mean, what really are the important attributes of succession planning, and how does one implement that within their department or division? So Bruce, I might start with you on that topic and get your thoughts.
Well, I'll start right off by being contrarian about this and saying that succession planning, as thought of in industry, is where you identify the next leader who will positively step into that role when they're ready and when you're ready. In academic medicine, it's not so clear. I would think it would be better to think of this as leadership development. Many leadership roles within an academic institution are filled through interviews, often looking for outside candidates. There is no absolute guarantee that the designated successor will take the position. And even more important, you're going to be training somebody who will be a leader, if not at your place, somewhere else. So rather than looking to find a successor, I think leaders should be looking to find how to develop leaders within their division, within their department, to take on a role of leadership, either there or elsewhere.
Bruce, that's a great point. And I agree, because at the end of the day, when you think about division chiefs and chair roles, if you will, you may have invested a lot in a leader who becomes an internal candidate for a search, but there's really no guarantee in most places that that person's going to advance and step into that role. But I like the, from a culture of a program perspective, I like the your perspective on investing in leadership development so that people are ready to move up, whether it's with you or with another organization. From our perspective, it's just often more the case, though, that we start a search and there are no internal candidates.
I thought of succession planning as internal recruiting, trying to create opportunities that keep people feeling like they're growing and developing so that they're progressing in their careers, they're gaining skills and leadership. And succession planning isn't just for developing, as Bruce said, it wasn't just for developing one job, because you're required to have searches oftentimes, and they may or may not get it, but having them feel like they're growing in their own skills and ability, and they can step into other roles in the department, that, and also that they'll be promoted. So I always felt like people focus on recruiting for vacant positions instead of developing the people within their department who can assume leadership roles and have the skills. And if they're the right candidate, that works out great, but they're still feeling satisfied and they're not actually out there looking for other jobs, because they're feeling good about how they're growing in their own department. So that's kind of how I looked at it.
So, you know, I agree with Bruce and Bruder, you know, with the internal view of a leader's, a really good leader will always be trying to develop their team and make opportunities available for their team members. But when I think of succession planning, I think there is actually also an external view. I think you have to, especially when you're, you know, a division director of, let's say, cardiology, and they're within cardiology or an oncology, there are many subspecialties that you may not have intimate knowledge of the pool of candidates out there. And that's the same for a chair of a department. I mean, if you're a nephrologist, you wouldn't have much knowledge of the talent that's out in oncology or cardiology or pulmonary. So you really have to, I think, constantly take advantages of external meetings, opportunities, times when you go to speak at an institution, when you invite someone to your institution to speak, to be asking yourself, you know, is this somebody I could see leading in my, you know, in my division, in my department? So to me, succession planning is not just, you know, your roles and responsibilities internally, which I totally agree with. I think that that is a primary responsibility. But long term, you've got to be able to be thinking about candidates that you might be recommending to a search firm or recommending to your search committee that you've met along the way and kept in touch with. And those relationships can be very, very valuable when you open a search, because these individuals have had time speaking with you and they know of your interest in their career, and that you took advantage of an opportunity to learn more about them that could only help you long term. So I think there's an internal and an external component to succession planning.
I agree with everything that's been said so far, and maybe this will be sort of my bringing together both the external and internal, because I've always thought of succession planning in relation to the legacy that you hope to leave behind when you leave, or the legacy that you want to be known for, even as you go forward. And so I've always thought, and I have to say that, you know, I thought this was the right thing to do, and I can't say I always did it very well myself, but I feel like succession planning almost starts when you take on a new position, because you have goals that you've set. And in your own mind, you sort of think about how you want to achieve those goals. And you're not going to be there forever. It might be a short term, even shorter than you think. It might be longer term, but setting up, in this case, you know, in my experience, it was a division that was growing. And so thinking about what some of the people in the division maybe didn't even recognize that they could step into one of those roles that you were saying, Valerie, that, well, I needed somebody who was really adept at simulation training, or, you know, something who could really take on a fellowship training program, or somebody to build up a different aspect of our research program, something along those lines, to achieve whatever legacy I felt, with or without me, the division, the goals that I had for the division, and what legacy I wanted to leave behind. So I know that's the second question that you were going to raise, Wesley, but I really believe that succession planning is totally intertwined with legacy, goals, development, and that it begins when you begin.
Thank you, Chris. One other, I guess another external perspective, Valerie, would be, I've seen some leaders effectively mentor their successors who are at other institutions, and through that mentorship relationship, had that phone call at some point in the future, I would like you to think about coming here and succeeding me in this role. So our succession plan and strategies may not always be solely internally focused, but just another thought.
No, I agree with all the comments that have been made. I just was, as a proceduralist during my career, thinking too that sometimes, particularly as many areas of pediatric interventions have gotten increasingly subspecialized, part of the succession planning also includes making sure that clinical expertise is maintained. You know, sometimes you've got an individual who's an expert in some specific disease state or specific surgical procedure. And I think it's imperative that person develop their protege so that if he or she were to leave the institution, you'd still be able to sustain the clinical program. A little more pedestrian than what we've been talking about, but I think it's really important to sustain clinical programs and not leave them dependent on an individual.
You have to be prepared as a leader for the unexpected. You know, God forbid somebody gets ill, has an accident, and is unable to, you know, they're off on a medical leave. Or as Bob was referring to, someone that has an incredible skill set takes a job somewhere else. So, you know, back to the kind of the internal, you have to always be thinking about the what ifs, because it's absolutely critical for the team that's left behind without a leader, rudderless, that they don't lose momentum in areas that have been on a good trajectory. So knowing who can step in, as Bob suggested, and also what you might do emergently in order to address a hole in a clinical service line or, you know, a large research group that is left without their leader for a period of time. Like, what kind of checks and balances you can put in place? Because that's when your leadership gets really strained. And it might not be the final succession plan that you come up with. Oftentimes it's an interim succession plan, but it has to be something that you're thinking about all the time. So in my head, you know, I used to think about every division, like, what if, you know, what was the what if? And if I saw a division that was weak in terms of manpower to support a service line, that became part of the recruiting strategy. Not that they would be able to step in fully, but they would be able to backfill and they could be part of the development of that team. So I think it's another layer of succession planning. We oftentimes just think about, well, who's going to be the next leader? But it gets back to, you know, the earlier comments around developing people and I would say being ready for that. Oh my gosh, what if?
Wes, you were asking about what are some of the best practices to have as a leader within a department for succession planning or the mentorship of growth and development. And I think that one of the things that people oftentimes forget about is as leaders to be very obvious in the people that they're talking with, division directors or people within the division, about that growth and development. When you're having a conversation with someone who's to talk about, well, how about this person? What are you doing with them to mentor them and to look at their growth and development? What activities do you have ongoing right now that you might be able to disperse with other faculty to help them grow as leaders? And those type of obvious discussions, I think, can really go a long way in terms of helping people understand how important it is to foster the growth and development of other people for that time when either the opportunity occurs internally or some other opportunity arises for them to step in and take that role. And we just have to make sure that we're very obvious about that.
Great point. Other thoughts from the council on best practices?
I would say that needs to be flexible. The practice would be related to the person's individual needs as well as the needs of the department and division. Identifying annually people's growth, what they're interested in, what additional training they believe would be necessary or helpful for them to achieve those goals are all part of this.
Thank you. Chris, you have a comment?
Well, like in departments with vice chairs, I found it very helpful in a division when I had enough people. For example, on our different neonatal intensive care units, where each one had a medical director, I would appoint someone, beg someone, someone to be an associate medical director. And in a way, they could try out the position. And it wasn't just a name only. They would fill in when the other person was in the lab or you know, or away on vacation or on medical leave and so forth. So they could acquire new skills. And I could decide, they could decide if this is something that they wanted to do in future. And I did the same with some of the different aspects, just like in departments, you know, I had an associate division head of research, training, and so forth. And sometimes that was a nice way for that person to both grow and develop, but also to realize that's not really what they wanted to do. In fact, they were better than the person that was in the role. And so anyway, that worked for me. And I see that seeing very positive results on that within departments. I'm sure, you know, Bruder, Valerie, you know, Craig, Bob, all of you can, you know, address that because you see that in departments where I think, you know, the vice chair of this and that is part of not just succession planning, but growth and development, but also recognition of, is this the path, the leadership path that you want to take?
Thank you, Chris. Bruder?
Those are all wonderful points. I think philosophically, we spend a lot of time in our departments nurturing our youngest faculty, the people who've just been appointed. We want to make sure they get promoted. We want to make sure they're successful. And we don't take the same effort to the mid-career and more senior faculty in our department. You know, if you think about the programs that are there, it's how to get promoted, you know, how to develop your CV, how to have wellness. But How many programs are there for someone who's an associate professor or a professor? And I think the annual review process often is so much more rigorous for and reviewed for the young, the associate assistant professors. And we don't often, looking back, probably I'm guilty too of not spending quite enough time developing programs for those mid-careers. And there are programs. And I think our department did develop the cardiology group that now has a leadership group and research groups that are more focused on mid-career. And I know societies have programs for folks who are looking for leadership roles, division head roles, and things like that. So I just think that one of the gaps may be in our succession planning, thinking about more about mid-career people and not the new assistant professor who were, you know, want to make sure they get started on a role. I don't know if others feel the same way.
I totally agree with Bruder. And interesting, you mentioned wellness. I'm convinced that giving people increasing leadership responsibilities is a powerful antidote to burnout. And giving people a sense of agency and creating the feeling that they have some say in how their career is developing is a very potent way to make sure people stay engaged and happy and have a more balanced view of their work.
I wanted to follow up on that because I think a lot of times we as leaders look to invest in those that are asking for it, right? Versus we know what it's going to take to do it. And the type of skills and abilities that are likely going to lead somebody to being successful in it. So not just, I guess, the squeaky wheel providing, you know, resources for, but I think it can be a real opportunity to, when you talk about burnout and professional satisfaction, going to people you believe to be leaders and pushing them to elevate their skills can help you from investing a lot into people who at the end of the day, when it comes down to it, may decide, you know, I'm really not thinking I want to do that. and it happens a lot that we see from this side. So really outstanding conversation and appreciate all the wisdom and insights from the group. If for those watching, if there are other subjects that you want to hear more about from the Child Health Advisory Council, please go to careerphysician.com and to Pediatric Insights and enjoy all the other content the council's created. Thank you.